You're listening to Industry Iowa, presented by CIRIS, the Center for Industrial Research and Service. Here's your host, Stephen Wilson.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Industry Iowa podcast, where everything we talk about is related to improving the quality of life in Iowa by helping businesses and their communities prosper and grow. My guest today is Ann Bonney. Hello, Ann.
Hey, Stephen, how are you?
Good. Good to see you again and have you on the Industry Iowa podcast. Well, just a brief introduction of Ann. Ann is a dynamic international keynote speaker, courage igniter, which I want to talk a little bit more about there, expert in change management, two-time author, right? So I know one of the books you have, you'll have to tell me about the books, but I know you are the host of the Dancing in the Discomfort Zone podcast. I've not yet listened to that, but I'm going to. I love the explanation of that. You do a lot of things with workshops, 20 years of corporate experience and also nonprofit leadership. And so what's really exciting to our listeners as well is that Ann is going to be one of the keynote speakers at the upcoming Iowa Lean Consortium conference being held on October 24th in Altoona, Iowa. Everything big happens in Iowa, and then it goes out to the coasts. So
that's right.
It's exciting to have you come in here in Iowa, October. So again, officially, Ann, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be with y'all in October too.
Yeah. So today I'm going to ask you some questions about some of the work that you do, but also in making sure that we're touching and connecting on the Iowa Lean Consortium, because we want people to get a little bit of a taste of who you are and what they might be able to anticipate hearing and receiving from you on those days. So just tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get to where you're at? It's an exciting one. It's been all over the place, literally and figuratively. It's been all over the place. So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, it is. It's a long and winding road. I'll give you the short version. It all started in Montclair, New Jersey on July 30th. Anyway, my life has been full of change. You know, I got home from second grade. We'd already moved four times at that point. And I got home from second grade and my parents sat me and my brother down and said, we're moving to Saudi Arabia. And so we moved to Saudi, we moved to Egypt, we moved to Greece. And then I went to boarding school, popped off to college, ended up working as a special ed teacher and then trained animals for a little while. Then went to work for Under Armour and helped launch, you know, that brand and those running shoes once they came out with running shoes, and super exciting and fun. And then went and worked for a couple other companies before deciding, you know, I think I'd like to try this speaking thing. And so through all of that change, stuff that I picked and stuff that I didn't pick, I've learned a lot of lessons about change and why it can be so important, so exciting, and so good. And especially today in the world as it is and constantly changing, it's a really important thing that we are able to embrace it, understand why it's so hard, and be able to move through it, not only for ourselves, but also for our teams at work.
Right. And I know we've all heard the only thing constant is change. But is change that big of a deal? Come on. We're all used to change. By now, we should be all okay with it and have no issues.
You would think, right? It was Heraclitus that said that in like 500 BC. So it's been 2,500 years. Sorry, I added a couple there. But we still are really bad at change. We know, you know,
right.
The thing is, every change involves a whole lot of unknowns, and human brain does not like unknown. It doesn't like uncertainty. It doesn't like unfamiliarity. And every time something changes, especially when we didn't pick it, we are blopped into a puddle of uncertainty, which makes a lot of people really uncomfortable.
And then we get into the discussion of, I'm sure you've heard it. So-and-so doesn't like change. Right. So-and-so doesn't like change. So-and-so doesn't like change. And years ago, I had a mentor say, well, you know, actually, I'll give you a little bit of pushback on that, because everybody likes change. If what? And what are some of those certain things that have to be in place? Why do we like change? And why do we accept it?
Well, when it's something that we want, obviously, it's a lot easier to accept. But for those people who in an organization say we're getting a new computer system or we're shifting the organizational structure to better serve our clients today, but it's changing a lot of the ways that we operate inside the organization, that the people that are able to roll with that, even if they're some of those people that don't like change, the people that are able to roll with that have a level of trust in the people that they're working with. You know, mm-hmm. This is a really important thing. I talk about it in the emotional intelligence and leadership and top communication. And in this change is that interpersonal trust of we're in this together. I'll be supported with whatever comes our way. And it's okay to take the risk and have, you know, possibly fail because this is the risk every time, you know, mm-hmm. and people don't like that. So if there's a level of trust with the team that's doing the change, it's much more likely to be accepted and adapted without a whole lot of hubbub.
Yeah. Hubbub. That's a great, that is so encompassing there. Hubbub. So think about it in terms of then common challenges. And I'm sure there's variations throughout depending upon the organization, the size of the organization, the maturity of the organization, where they are with change management. But I'm guessing that there are certain challenges that organizations consistently come up against as it relates to change. What might some of those be?
Well, you know, it's usually the resistance from the individuals, the organization, you know, it's all of those organizational factors you talked about, but it's also all the individual factors that come into work with everybody on the team that will also impact their ability to accept the change or not. But usually it's resistance. Usually it's people who deny that it's actually happening and ignore it and continue doing business as they always did. It's people that have a lot of learning fear, that they don't, you know, people who've been in the workforce for a long time and suddenly everything's being automated. Suddenly everything's on a computer. I don't know how to do that. So that learning fear comes in, and also just the anger and almost mm-hmm. mourning that comes with having to do something a completely new way. And that comes with a lot of stress and a lot of burnout and a lot of resistance and all of that stuff. So that's usually on my end. On the human end of it. I'm not so much in the process end, but that's usually what we see in the human end.
What are some remedies? What are some practical things that organizations can do to mitigate or eliminate those particular things?
Well, first of all, a culture of open communication is key. If I'm frustrated, but I feel like I can come to you and talk to you about my frustrations without fear of retribution or without fear of judgment or anything like that, we're going to be in a much better place. Because that also allows you as the manager to say, hey, Ann, I need you to get on board. What's going on? And so having that communication and being able to talk to your teams. One of the things when I was with Under Armour, they used to have rumor meetings. It was early on. I started as employee number 80. And so things were changing very fast. Mm-hmm. And at one point, the rumor mill was going crazy, and they brought us into a room, and they said, all right, what are you hearing? What are the rumors? And it was like crickets in that room. We're all looking at each other
right,
like,
yeah,
I'm not going to say anything. Are you saying that? I'm not going to say anything, you know? Yeah. And finally, after the second or third meeting, we all kind of got on board, and we're like, oh, I see what they're trying to do here. It's our opportunity to share what's keeping us up at night, what makes us nervous, what don't we like, what rumors are going around that we should get out in the open. And that was incredibly valuable to create that two-way dialogue and halted a lot of the rumors and a lot of the fears that were going around that caused those rumors.
We're going to have multiple opportunities. I want to interject throughout, because hopefully everybody's going to be listening all the way to the end, right? So I'm going to say, everybody, listen to the end. But if by chance somebody doesn't listen to the end, how can they find out a little bit more about you, Ann?
Yeah, my website is yourchangespeaker.com.
Well, that's simple.
I know, right? I try to make it easy.
What are they going to find there when they go?
That's my website. You're going to find everything you need as far as what topics I have expertise in, what kind of programs that I lead. I'm also an MC, so you'll find some information on that. You'll get a video on me. You'll get my blog, my podcast. You can join my email list, get my books, all the things.
All the All the good stuff, all the hubbub there. You can pick it up there, right on your speaker deck. Yeah. Okay. So on that note, then you're going to be speaking at the ILC coming up in October, and without revealing what it is you're going to be talking about, what are you going to be talking about?
So basically, we're going to talk about why is change so hard for people. Go a little bit deeper into the neuroscience, not in a fun way, not in like a gross way. And then we are going to, because I'm not certified for going that deep into neuroscience, but I know enough to be dangerous. So we're going to talk about why it's hard so we can build a little bit of empathy for ourselves and for the people on our team. And then we're going to talk about a three-step process to be able to move through it. It's very concrete. You know, I'm about how do I do this? Like, tell me what to do rather than just giving me theories. So we'll go with three very concrete steps that you can take, or you can work with your team through to help you move through change.
How does your role as a courage igniter connect with change and that message of change management?
Yep. As we talked about, every single time something changes, there's a lot of unknowns, and thus there's a lot of risk. We might fail. We might be judged. We might get kicked out of the tribe. All of these things are fundamental fears for humans, because back when our brains were invented, if all that stuff happened, we probably weren't going to survive, right? So I like to normalize that, which helps people be more courageous in the moments where they're like, oh my gosh, I've never dealt with this before. I don't know what to do. I'm freaking out. I'm going to die. You know, and by having that reminder of, hey, oh, I remember that weird redhead talked about this. You know, this isn't a bad thing that I'm feeling this way. It is just a little bit of information in that. Let me think about this, and then we can move forward. So that's where the courage comes in, because it's facing those risks and uncertainties and moving through them rather than letting them stop us. Which requires a lot of courage. So I feel like I ignite people's courage to move through change, through any challenge, a lot more effectively.
Now, who's your primary audience? Is it leaders? Is it those individuals that are on that are working to incorporate change, introduce change, or is it, you know, those that are in that process of being recipients of the change request? Similar message, different messages?
Similar message, because I think for the, and my main audience is humans. It's all of those people. Depending on who's in the audience at the time, I might take a more leadership focused angle versus a more personal focused angle. But basically learning the information that I'm going to provide on the 24th helps everybody not only to move through their points of resistance, but also build empathy and lead others through it, understanding where they might go through. You know, because if you're somebody like me, I've been dealing with change for 51 years now. I know change. I like it. I know it's good. I might have a minute where I'm like, oh, crap. And then I move on with it and we're good, right? But not everybody's like that. And so I love this information, because it allows me to provide people who have a different lived experience than me with some ammunition to be able to deal with it if it's not as easy for them.
So one thing that I was thinking about as far as change management, and then looking at some of the other topics that you deal with, effective communication, emotional intelligence, influential leadership, they seem to be not necessarily subsets, but it's, hey, change management, you got to have effective communication. So very simply and in a very concise way, just for time purposes, what role does effective communication play? What does that look like? Define. Yeah, that's a big one. Define what effective communication is.
Yeah. Well, going back to what I talked about when change is easier, communication is huge, because if we can effectively create a two-way communication channel, I can ask you the questions I need, I can get the information I need, and I feel comfortable and I trust that that's going to be a safe situation. And that all comes from communication, how we communicate all the time, not just when it's hard, all the time. And you know, if we can do that well, what is the definition of communication? Exchanging information and building relationships. I think that those two things go hand in hand. Oftentimes we just see the exchange information piece, but I think exchange information in a way that builds relationships and builds trust is the key to effective communication. It's that communication going well, being an investment in the future and ease of other communication.
Again, you're listening to Industry Iowa Podcast, and my guest is Ann Bonney. Again, you can find out information about her, from her, for her, at yourchangespeaker.com. Is that correct? Yep, yourchangespeaker.com. Ann is going to be the keynote speaker at the October 24th Iowa Lean Consortium. And also, if you want to find out more about Cirrus, you can go to cirrus.iastate.edu. Again, cirrus.iastate.edu. And so effective communication, we're talking about change, also about emotional intelligence.
Yes.
That again, you know, that again is such a large topic there. As it relates to change in that, but how can somebody goes, okay, well, I want to increase my, how do I increase my emotional intelligence? And how does that play into change?
Yeah.
How do
well,
I increase
first
and how
of all,
does that
I recommend
play?
A phenomenal book. Dr. Travis Bradbury wrote a book called Emotional Intelligence 2.0. And it is super tactical, super short. You get a little quiz to take. I wish I get kickbacks from the book because I recommend it all the time. Highly recommend that book. But one of the key ways that I think people can improve their EQ in a really effective way is doing the debrief. After you get out of a human interaction with another human, and it didn't go well, either you reacted the way you didn't want, you wish you'd said something differently, or your emotional reaction caused an external reaction you wish you hadn't. Do a debrief after, when you're away from the situation, and ask yourself, what happened? What went well? What would I do again? What do I wish had gone differently? And what am I gonna do next time? Because if we're thinking about our emotional intelligence, it's being able to understand and control, regulate our reactions, our emotional reactions, okay? And the only way we can get better at that is by recognizing when it doesn't go well and planning for next time. So whether it's the way I reacted to somebody else or the way I reacted and maybe I got intimidated and shut down and didn't say what I needed to say, but by doing the debrief, I'm prepared for when the next time that happens, I will do something different rather than just doing what I always do that isn't getting me the results I want. That's a quick one.
That's a quick one. That's one of those things where it talks about it. It's simple. Just simply do a debrief, right? But it's not easy.
Right.
Simple, but not easy. Do you have any, is there a scenario that you can speak to, maybe even something that you yourself, where you applied that emotional intelligence, that debrief, or that you're familiar with?
Yeah. So I did a presentation once. I did a training. It was early in my speaking career, and it wasn't good. As far as I'm concerned, it was not good. It was not up to the standard that I'm able to present. And on the drive home, I'm beating myself up. That was terrible. Mm-hmm. I need to give them their money back and offer them 4 free training sessions and, you know, babysit their kids and make them dinner. You know, I mean, I was like going kind of cuckoo crazy over, you know, and then I stopped. I said, okay, wait a minute. What happened? What are the facts, sweetheart? Like, only the facts, ma'am. And I acknowledged what went well because it wasn't all a complete disaster. And then I started thinking about what would I do differently. And I realized that though it wasn't up to my standard, I was able to reframe it and realized I had delivered on what they paid me to deliver. Now, sure. I did offer them follow-up training, but I was able to take my emotional reaction and rather than go with that initial, oh my gosh, I now need to go build them a house, and temper it to a realistic response to the situation. So fortunately, it wasn't in response to something. Well, the other thing that I looked at, not only was my response what I was going to do as a result, but what happened during that talk that set me off? And I realized, you know, I was intimidated by the audience. And mm-hmm. So all I was saying to myself is get this over with. They don't want to hear you. They think you're some little punk with weird red hair and they don't want to hear what you have to say. And that derailed me, which do, and so I was able to shift that around. And when I start hearing myself say that in front of an audience, like, oh, they don't want to hear what I have to say, I'm like, ooh, catch it, turn it around, sweetheart. Let's, I call myself sweetheart a lot. I'm very loving to myself.
Hey, you got to begin there. You've got to begin there. Well, and I heard somebody say, they put it in the context of the reality is that the people out in the audience, and this was because somebody was talking about that fear of speaking, and that the reality is the people in the audience want you to succeed just as much as you want to succeed. They want to have a great presentation. They hope you do well, right?
Yeah. And all that aside, this is, and speaking for me is essentially, that's my job. And so it was really important for me to identify when doing the job that somebody's paying me to do, I need to be able to harness that confidence and not be derailed by things. I'm a professional, like that's not okay. And this applies really well to having to do presentations in any job or having to have a conversation with your boss. You know, understanding what your emotional reaction is with that individual, how am I going to behave in the future so I can get the results I want?
So how does that apply into change? Being either a deliverer of that message of change, the requester of change, or a recipient of that change request?
Yeah.
How does emotional intelligence play in that?
Well, when it's the deliverer, part of what I've been saying is that in my keynote, I help you build empathy in leaders so they can have a little bit better understanding of what their team's going through. When you're presenting change, there's probably going to be some resistance, some hubbub. And for the leader, the emotional intelligence comes in to be able to say, okay, I understand why these people are frustrated. Let me talk with them in a calm, intelligent way so that we, rather than getting frustrated and flying off the handle. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's being able to lead through it calmly and deal with that resistance when it comes, rather than letting it derail you as a leader, and being able to continue to communicate, even when I know this person really hates this idea and really doesn't really like me right now either. And then on the recipient of change end, really thinking about, you know, when something changes and we don't like it because we like the way it was for all the time that we've done it, and now we have to do it a different way, you know, all the fears come up. The emotional intelligence comes in to be able to say, okay, I recognize that I don't like this and it's happening. And so what can I do to move through this more effectively? That requires shifting the thinking in your brain from the reactive part that's just trying to keep you alive around to the front, more modern part that actually has the logic, right? And that's something that's learned and requires emotional intelligence.
In our last one, differentiate an influential leader from just a leader. Again, in a short amount of time, what does that mean? You know, somebody, hey, we category A, we got an influential leader. Yep. We just got a leader. What differentiates?
Well, I would say an influential leader is somebody people want to be a part of what they're doing. People, you know, it's a leader people want to follow. They want to jump on board, even if they don't like what's happening. And as I talked about at the very beginning, the trust piece that makes change easier, an influential leader has that trust with their team. And they're able to say, hey, Stephen, I know you're not going to like this, but here's what we're doing, and I want to work through it with you. That's influential. Now you hopefully want to get on board and make everything a whole lot easier and more pleasant.
There's so much here, folks, that we could go into. We could spend over a half an hour on each of these subjects here with Ann. But I do again encourage you to go out to the website. Talk about your podcast just a little bit. What is that about?
Yeah. So all the topics we just talked about are basically uncomfortable things. I specialize in discomfort, and so it seemed only appropriate to build my podcast around it. And basically, interview style, about every five episodes, I jump in and give some content of my own. But otherwise, I just interview cool people who have dealt with uncomfortable stuff. I literally just did a interview this morning with somebody who specializes in people pleasing. I interviewed somebody who helps to eliminate sexual human trafficking. somebody mm-hmm. who got out of jail and is rebuilding his life, somebody who is a leader and experienced burnout as an executive. So the beauty is I can talk about anything that makes anybody uncomfortable, because as we learn more about things, we get less uncomfortable and less resistant to it. And so that's the whole premise of the podcast.
And it's dancing in the discomfort. Is that correct?
Dancing in the discomfort zone. We all know about the comfort zone. I'm talking about the discomfort zone.
I'm sure that there's a high degree of familiarity with that discomfort zone.
Yeah.
Well, hey, thank you so much again. So as we close, and this is going to be going out prior to the conference. Anything else you want to share about for those potentially coming to the conference? And I do want to mention also, and it's glaring me right in the face, your book, Get Over It. What's that about?
Oh, well, there's two of them. Like you said earlier, Get Over It is with 47 tips on embracing the discomfort of change. And then Get Them Over It is the one for leaders on helping people overcome the resistance to change and leading through it. So I will be giving out, I like to be interactive in my keynotes. So I'm going to be giving out some copies of that, both of those books during the session, just to basically bribe people to talk back to me. And it becomes a much more fun interactive event. So I guess that's what I want to know. There's free gifts. I'm not a bribery.
there's free gifts. And I'll once I figure out what I'm going to be wearing, I will send that to you. So you can be looking, hey, yes, you're looking for me, identify and call me out if you need to. I'm shameless that way. Well, Ann, thanks so much for being on Industry Iowa. Appreciate it. Look forward to speaking to the group there on October 24th. Again, if you'd like to find out more information about that, everyone, cirrus.iastate.edu, and you can just connect to the Iowa Lean Consortium. Ann, thanks again so much for being on today.
Absolutely. I'll see y'all in Altoona.